Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Innergex Renewable Energy's 2017 third quarter results conference call. Bienvenue à la conférence téléphonique des résultats du troisième trimestre de l'exercice 2017 d'Innergex Énergies Renouvelables. At this time, all participants on the phone are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session for analysts and institutional investors, and instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded. I will now turn the conference over to Karine Vachon, Communications Director. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'd like to specify that this conference will be held in English. Members of the media are invited to ask their questions by phone after this call. This call contains forward-looking statements within the meaning of applicable securities laws. Although the corporation believes that the expectation and assumptions on which forward-looking statements are based are reasonable under the current circumstances, listeners are cautioned not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements, as no assurance can be given that it will prove to be correct. Forward-looking information contained herein is made as at the date of this call, and the corporation does not undertake any obligation to update or revise any forward-looking information, whether as a result of events or circumstances occurring after the date hereof, unless so required by law. During this call, we will refer to financial measures that are not recognized according to International Financial Reporting Standards. Please refer to the non-IFRS measures section of the financial review for more information. Our speakers today will be Mr. Michel Letellier, President and CEO, Mr. Jean Perron, Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Jean Trudel, Chief Investment Officer. I now turn the conference over to Mr. Perron.
Thank you, Karine. Good morning. Well, the results for the three-month period ended September 30, 2017, shows production that was 90% of the long-term average, due mainly to post-commissioning activities that operated Wet River in British Columbia and Mesgi'g Ugju'sum Wind Farm in the province of Quebec, which also had low wind regimes and outage created by Hydro-Québec, and below-average wind farms, wind regimes in France, which were partly offset by above-average water flows in the hydroelectric sector in the province of Quebec and Ontario. Overall, the production increased 49% compared to last year, due mainly to the completion of the recently commissioned Mesgi'g Ugju'sum Wind Farm, operated with Boulder Creek Project, and to the wind facilities located in France and acquired in 2016 and 2017. They were partly offset by lower production at our Quebec wind farms. Revenues for the quarter were 39 million higher than in 2016. This 56% increase is attributable mainly to the completion of the recently commissioned projects and the acquisition in France. Adjusted EBITDA for the quarter was 30 million higher compared to Q3 2016, due to the increase in revenues explained, but partly offset by higher operating expense and G&A due to the higher number of facilities and operations. Finance costs were 13 million higher compared to last year, and depreciation and amortization were higher by 10 million. The increase are also due to the new facilities described. These elements described above resulted in a net 4 million increase in net earnings compared to last year, Q3 2016. For the nine-month period, production was 91% of the long-term average, due mainly to lower production from post-commissioning activities at Upper Lady Wet River in BC, Mesgi'g Ugju'sum in province of Quebec, below-average wind regimes in Quebec and France, and lower water flows in British Columbia. This was partly offset by above-average water flows in Quebec and Ontario. Overall, production increased 23% compared to 2016, due mainly to the commission of the recently commissioned facilities, the wind farms facilities located in France and acquired, but were partly offset by lower production at most of our British Columbia hydro facilities and Quebec wind farms. Revenues for the nine-month period were 72.8 million higher than in 2016. This 33% increase is attributable mainly to the completion of the recently commissioned projects and the acquisition in France. Again, partly offset by lower production at our hydro facilities in BC, which in 2016 were above average, and at our Quebec wind farms. Adjusted EBITDA since the beginning of the year was 52.9 million higher compared to 2016 due to the increase in revenues, partly offset by higher operating and G&A expenses. Finance costs were 37 million higher compared to 2016. Depreciation and amortization were also higher by 30 million. The increase are due to the facilities acquired or commissioning or commission. The below average production since the beginning of the year compared to an above average production last year explains the decrease in net earnings as opposed to the increase in revenues. Our trailing 12 months free cash flows ending on September 30 reached $89 million compared to $75.8 million last year. Our payout ratio stood at 80% compared to 89% in 2016. The improvement in the payout ratio is mainly due to the recently commissioned facilities of Mesquite Hugesson, Upper-Leduit, and Boulder Creek, which generated higher free cash flow, partly offset by the increase in annual dividends and a higher number of common shares outstanding. This concludes my review of the results. I'd be happy to answer your question later on during the call, and I'll turn it back to Michel.
So thank you, Jean. Good morning, everybody. First of all, I'd like to just to make sure that we take a moment to reflect on something that we worked on very hard in the last 5-6 years since the merger of the income fund and the grow company. It's the first time that we have a payout ratio reaching 80% or lower on a 12-month basis. So it seems that we've been working toward that goal for a long time, but we now have achieved it. And I think it's important to mention it and to reflect on the effort of all the management and the team that have put all these nice projects in commercial service, plus the new acquisition. This is now showing us a very strong base of long-term asset with long-term PPA. This is also securing of our ability to implement the growth, international growth that we have initiated a few years ago, and it also show how secure and sustainable our dividend is for the longest possible time. So this is important for me, and I'm very happy to now have achieved this milestone. Of course, we have a lot of good thing and good challenge in front of us. I think that we have implemented and started to implement the international growth. It's not easy, but I think that we are on the right path. To come back on our strategy, we wanted to be in France. I think that we have shown the good work that we've done in France. I think we have now a very nice team established in Lyon. We have a base of operating facility, some under construction, two under construction that should be put in commercial service by the end of December. Most of the turbine are producing, but we'll declare COD in the next few weeks to come. But I think that France is on the right path. We have very nice challenge, obviously, in France. But I think that as terms of presence, we can say that this is has been achieved. We have achieved the first milestone in France to be established, having a good team on the ground to grow the business. We also want to be in South America. This is challenging in terms of announcing a transaction. It's not that we're not working hard in South America. We're looking into many transactions. We're seeing a lot of activities over there. We're doing some due diligence on many small hydro, and we're talking with a lot of potential partners. So this is still a big focused on the team. We are anxious to announce a transaction over there. That doesn't mean that we will do stupid things. We're taking our time, working hard. Takes a little bit more time to announce something, but we're still very positive on that market. And the third big market that we wanted to attack was the U.S. Remember that we had started to implement a small team from an office in San Diego. We have hired our first employee in the U.S., but things have into the fifth gear with the acquisition of Altera. We'll talk about the acquisition in a few minutes of Altera, but I think that this acquisition fits very, very well in our strategy to be in the U.S., although there's some noise on the PTC program in the U.S. It's not new. In the last 5 years, I don't know how many drama around the PTC that has unfolded. I think that reason will prevail, and that we'll see some not so bad news around the PTC. You know my opinion on PTC. I think they have bring a lot of activities in the U.S. I think that the renewable energy, mainly the solar and also the wind to some degree, is mature enough to face future competition without the PTC as we know. But the project that have already been qualified PTC, it would be sad to see them not having it, although I think that we will be in a position to make advantage of some advanced project that Altera has bring forward. I'll talk about it later. But ultimately, once everything would have settled, I think that the U.S. would be a better place for a Canadian company to make growth without the PTC in the future. And as you know, we like the long term. We're there for the long term. Short term bumps are an inconvenience, but we are focusing on the long term growth. And I think that the U.S. will be a nice market for us in the future. So if we come back a little bit on the transaction of Altera, first of all, I think it's the asset in BC, as we said, are natural. We know them. I think that we'll have nice little synergy in terms of operation. They also have shown some diversification in BC. Altera reported yesterday that their two hydro facilities were producing a little bit over the long-term average, and ours in the south were underperforming. So it shows that even within the same province, you can diversify the production. So I'm glad to see that these are not necessarily fully correlated, and that through these acquisition, we can also have some diversification. Same thing with the wind. Doki Wind produced very well this last quarter, where we had some other challenges in the wind in France, namely. So I like this the Canadian asset. It provides long-term contract and diversification for us. So there's no question that we're happy with those. Iceland, as we mentioned, is a new technology for us, geothermal, but with season and experience management, I think that there's some growth to be unleashed there. Some very nice project, I think, would bring some growth in Iceland. And also, the management are working hard to bring back the production on the long-term averages for the 100 megawatt project that they had a little bit of a challenge in the past. So still happy with Iceland. U.S. is definitely, like we said, I think that for us, we like the existing facility. We like the fact that they have a flapped up under construction that will generate future cash flow in the next year. And we also like the fact that they have a nice portfolio of project that we can work on. We also love the idea that we have more professional that have been doing some project in the States. They have some good relationship with many suppliers, and tax equity provider. So that will help us coupled with our team. We will be in a position to have some more potential to work on project at the same time. So I'm very happy also to see the potential growth of the future in the U.S. Now, I think that it's important to explain a little bit more the price that we have paid for the these assets. Just to come back, we know that we are acquiring about net 482 megawatt of existing project and project under construction. There's three projects under construction. So this is 482 megawatt would generate in terms of going rate of EBITDA once the project will be fully operating, the one that are in construction plus the existing project, would generate something close to $75 million of EBITDA. This is a little bit complicated, of course, to generate these EBITDA given the fact that Altera owns sometimes just a portion, not necessarily a controlling investment in some assets. So we'll try to make an extra, an extra to try to give you some more guidance into the cash flow available in these assets going forward, so that it'll be easier for investor to digest the information. But based on that, you know, we have announced a transaction based on an enterprise value of about $1.1 billion. You have this $75 million of EBITDA, and just mind you one second that Altera, and that can be confusing, Altera is reporting in U.S. dollar. So just make sure that whenever you're looking into Altera's numbers, they are in U.S. dollars. So just it's easy to make that that mistake. So if we come back to the $1.1 billion and the $75 million of EBITDA, that provides you a 14.7 times the EBITDA enterprise value, which is seems to be a little bit high. But then if you go back into some of the synergy, and I would say some synergy not only for reducing the headcounts, but also mixing the two company, will have definitely synergy in the development, most specifically in the U.S. Obviously, we were gearing up to be present in the U.S. They are also present in the U.S., so I think we will be able to generate some synergy there. But in this case, we only are forecasting to be very conservative about $5 million of synergy. And if you mix with that the head office, you would end up with roughly about $79.8 million of EBITDA. So that brings back the ratio of about 13.8. It's still not cheap, but this is providing us a fair market value for existing asset and assets under construction, and it's providing us the growth of the pipeline. So in my book, I think it's a balance and a fair transaction that provides Innergex with a good potential growth in the U.S. Also, I'd just like to mention also that sometimes it's a little bit unfair also to look at the U.S. The next few years in the U.S., the EBITDA or the cash flow available for the shareholder might be a little bit low, given the fact that the tax equity structure is almost like financing a project on only 10 years, while you have an asset that can certainly last more than 20, 25 years. So you end up having basically to reimburse a big portion of your project in less than 10 years. So that, in a way, is also very interesting on in terms of long-term sustainability of the cash flow, meaning that once this is behind, once the tax equity guys have been repaid, then you have a lot more free cash flow from these assets going forward after a year, let's say 9, 10, or 11. So just have to keep that in mind in terms of total internal rate of return based on 25 years cash flow. So this is giving a little bit of that guidelines, and to remind you that once the company would have finalized the acquisition and the project under construction would be done, Innergex would now have about 1,600 megawatt of net operating facility by the end of 2019 without any other project than the one that are under construction and existing facility. So that's for me, it's a path forward, at least a 2,000 megawatt by 2020, given the fact that we are working on many front in France, in South America, and obviously on the portfolio that Altera is bringing into the United States. So on this, I think we can take some questions.
This completes our presentation. We now invite you to ask your questions.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received. Please ensure you lift the handset if you are using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. Your first question comes from the line of Nelson Ng of RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Great, thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Nelson.
Just a quick one on France. I know over the last 2 years there's been a big push to kind of expand into France, mainly through M&A. I guess with the Altera acquisition, in France, are you shifting more towards development rather than M&A, or could should we expect to see some, I guess, more acquisitions of, construction-ready projects in France?
Well, in France, first of all, Altera doesn't change anything in our, strategy to grow in Europe or South America. It's just providing us a platform to work on the U.S. and bring this this forward. So France, for us, we want to grow our own projects. We're working on it. We have a portfolio of more than 100 megawatt of our own project. We're working to expand that. Obviously, we're also open to M&A. We're also open to joint venture to develop project and joint venture to bid project in future RFP. There's two programs in France. There, the program where you would have a type of a FIT program or pay for the difference in small project of maximum of about 6 turbines. These we're working on, and obviously there's a lot of activities around those two, but there will be a possibility to bid for bigger project in future RFPs, and sometimes a smaller producer in France have not been exposed to these type of RFPs and perhaps needs partners. So we'll be on the lookout for that aspect as well. And I must say that since we're in France and having a foothold in Lyon, we're seeing a lot more activities and possibility. So we're still very focused on France because we think that our office in France is getting mature and have the ability to do their own work. Obviously, the head office is needed in some cases, but now we have this team that can manage the growth in France by themselves. So that frees up some top management time to concentrate in the U.S. and South America.
Okay, so you do have, critical mass, but you'll still look at developing your own in addition to, buying, construction-ready or even operating projects in France.
Yeah, Nelson, it's always an equilibrium between return and risk. If an M&A give us a fair return and it's accretive for our shareholder, why not taking it and developing it, considering the risk profile of that? We always take that that approach. If it's accretive and it's not that risky, and it brings some good value and diversification for our portfolio, we're willing to deploy capital.
Okay, thanks. And then just my next question, you mentioned distributable cash and the kind of expectations on giving more color for Altera. I guess from a distributable cash or free cash flow per share metric, I think the expectation was it would be a little bit dilutive for the near term, but accretive longer term. I guess from your perspective, do you know, like, which year roughly do you expect to see that switch from being slightly dilutive to accretive from that acquisition, like on a free cash flow per share metric?
Well, I think that on a free cash flow per share metric, it's always the same thing. As soon as you have construction project, you basically pay or expense all your equity up front. And by the time the cash flow comes, it's never accretive, obviously, because you have put the equity without the cash flow coming from the operation. So I would say that by something in 2019, when we would have the full cash flow from the project under construction, I think that we'll start to see some accretion on a cash per share basis. And
okay,
obviously,
thanks.
Yeah, that's
yeah. Okay, thanks. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of David Quezada of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Morning, guys.
Good morning.
My first question here on just as it relates to the Altera pipeline of projects, I'm curious if you've had any discussions with your sometimes partners at Desjardins and what their appetite is for potentially investing in the U.S. I know that they've mostly partnered with you in France so far.
Oh, yes, we have some discussion with them, and not only them. And Desjardins, we love Desjardins, but there's perhaps better fit fund or available fund in the U.S. that are more specifically targeting U.S. asset base, and they might be better equipped to invest in the U.S. But you know, I think we're always willing and imaginative to create and lower the cost of capital, and this is going to be still a focus for Innergex team to maximize the or minimize the cost of capital and maximize our return on whatever project we're doing. But definitely, Desjardins has been a great partner in the past. So is La Caisse des Dépôts, and through the acquisition and the management of Altera, I think we have also the ability to start new relationship with some very interesting financial sponsors in the U.S. as well.
Okay, great. That's helpful. Thank you. My only other question here, just in terms of the noise that you mentioned on the wind PTC, I'm curious what your thoughts are on other alternatives for financing projects in the U.S. outside of the tax equity structure. Do you feel that there's good availability of project level financing there?
Well, you know, it's I think that the one that are benefiting from the PTC in the U.S. are the utility and the big industrial customer. We've seen crazy numbers for proposed long-term contract, maybe 10, 12 years contract below 2 cents. So that doesn't make a lot of sense, right? The only reason that those PPA are offered is because the PTC is present, because you know, any way you're twisting the numbers in the U.S., it takes anywhere between 3.5 cents and 4.5 cents to make project viable in the U.S. So my point of view is that, thanks, we'll take the PTC if they're there. I think that the PTC are an expensive way to finance project, very complicated. Lawyers are making a ton of money. Wall Street is making a ton of money on these transactions. And the utility are benefiting from a very artificially low long-term contract. That being said, it does encourage in the numbers of projects to be developed. But I think that once the PTC would be gone, I think that the more normal type of financing would emerge. And then we would be able to put project finance and regular financing on the longer period and hence have, in my book, a more standard long-term development where you would have a weighted cost of capital more in line in what we've seen in Canada or in the past. I think that PTC are creating a little bit of our artificial momentum, which, brings some people to, because, tax equity guys need some kind of a contract in order to get into your project. PTC are basically a little bit like a project finance guy with a shorter term and more access to the cash flow. They're, I would say, they're worse than a project finance in ways in terms of constraint on the cash flow availability for the sponsor. So we'll take whatever it brings in terms of positive, but I think that the long term without PTC in the U.S. is a better market for a Canadian company. I've been saying it for a long time, and I still believe that although it might be negative in terms of volume of project to be developed in the near future once the PTC would be gone. But again, I think that we'll be happier camper in the U.S. without PTC in the future.
That's interesting. Thank you. That's all I had. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any additional questions at this time, please press the star followed by the 1. As a reminder, if you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing the keys. Your next question comes from the line of Sean Stewart of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning.
A couple questions. Can you just provide an update on the post-commissioning issues you had at Upper Lillooet and MU? Those are all in the rearview mirror, I suppose, at this point?
Whoa. I like your optimism, Sean. Working on it. I think that Upper Lillooet, the sand will be an issue for us in the future. We'll learn how to manage it better. The biggest issue, if you remember, is the fact that we had seal shafts made of Teflon that were basically wearing off very, very quickly, and we had to change them on a regular basis. So that brought most of the downtime, mechanical downtime was the issue. We're fixing that with a new seal shaft with ceramic inside that has been introduced in the northern part of BC where they had the same issue, and they work very well. So that is being implemented, and that's going to solve most of the mechanical issue. We'll have a little bit more wear and tear on some of the component of a turbine, but that's going to be fixed during winter time when the winter is flow is low in the winter time. So we shouldn't have downtime because of the more regular maintenance on wear and tear. We also have implemented some modification in the flow or the I would say the arrangement of the intake flow, which I think will improve also. we are also going to implement a system where as soon as sand would accumulate in front of the intake, we'll do a quick flush system, which basically means we'll open up some sluice gates and flush the sand in front of the intake. That seems to be obvious, but unfortunately, we were not able to do that on a regular basis last summer because of environmental restriction. We had biologists in the downstream sector of the river taking all kinds of samples when we were doing experimental quick flush, and there were no material adverse effect on the fish. So we're optimistic that this will be implemented with the change in the operating environmental permit for next summer. So that should help also a lot. Now, if we switch to MU, we're working very closely with Sandvion, and they have identified an issue with a electronic converter. They're working on implementing a solution to fix that problem. They have equipped some of our turbine with it, also with a software enhancement. And this is showing great potential. So we're hoping that through their conclusion, they will re-equip and make the retrofit on all the rest of the turbine so that we will see the availability rate goes up and the overall performance of the turbine going up as well. Mind you that, as we might have said, through contractual agreement with Sandvion, we expect to be, I would say, majority of the loss synergy that we have experienced in the last year should be covered by financial liquidated damages with Sandvion. So on that basis, we're not that nervous, and Sandvion is well aware of its obligations and working to fix the problem. So yes, I'm very hopeful that these will be in the rear view mirror in no time, Sean, but still working on the implementation.
Thanks for that detail. Thanks, Michel. One other question quickly. You gave lots of detail on how you're thinking about the prospective pipelines, both Altera and your organic initiatives that you're undertaking in Latin America and France. Can you give us an idea of how you think about the potential returns for prospective projects, the Altera opportunity set versus what you guys had on your plate already? And I know PTCs play into that, but is it possible to provide some, I guess, broad thoughts on the return differentials between those two opportunity sets?
Yes, we could. As I mentioned in the past, U.S. is very difficult to call return because it depends on the assumption of the long-term view on power prices. And we have a conservative view on power prices, which provide potentially upside in our view, but if prices are better than we anticipate. I'm personally driven by the fact that there's definitely many factors to at play in establishing the future price of electricity in the States. Green gas, CO2 tax, RECs, availability of nuclear, well, not availability, but renewal of nuclear project in the United States is a big driver. What is going to happen with coal under the Republican and Trump administration? Obviously, it's not very positive, but we're investing for the long term, so hopefully there will be more change in the future government that will see the light of the day on the green gas effect of the coal. But So it's a long answer, but I think that, especially if we develop project, we could expect anywhere between 9 and up to perhaps 11-12% return, depending on how we see the price of electricity. But what we're doing is that we're trying to look into a fairly conservative approach, and any project has to be accretive on that basis. So when we're developing a project in the States, I think we have a little bit more return than obviously if you acquire something and still you're creating value by developing your own project. But we wouldn't start a project where we wouldn't think that it would be accretive to the value of the company given the risk profile that we're taking, and based on a fairly conservative approach on the long-term price of electricity.
That's great detail. Thanks very much, guys.
Pleasure.
Your next question comes from the line of Jeremy Rosenfield of Industrial Alliance. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I just want to come back to the discussion of the PTCs that you're very interesting talking about just earlier. And I'm wondering, Michel, if you're thinking about a follow-on investment or acquisition in the U.S. market to gain an operating business that might generate, substantial tax benefits by being able to pair that with Altera's development pipeline, or if that seems like you might be getting away from, you know, more normal strategy of just investing, you know, in good businesses overall on a pre-tax, you know, basis rather than trying to consider, you know, complex tax-oriented transactions?
Well, we're willing to do some financial engineering, and I think now we are up to speed on all this craziness structure of tax equity. But, you know, plain vanilla long-term contract with existing hydro facility in the States or existing wind, we don't mind plain vanilla neither. And one of the reasons why it was difficult to acquire assets in the past in the U.S. is I think that there are still pockets of people that are or were very optimistic on price recovery and long-term price of energy. So it's difficult to acquire something from a seller that is, well, providing you a power curve that, to me, was very optimistic. And to some degree, they were a buyer that were as optimistic in some cases. But I think that optimism is fading down a little bit, and people are getting a little bit more rational about the long-term price of electricity in the States, and perhaps that would provide us opportunity to acquire existing facility to complete a diversified portfolio in the States. So with more people on the ground, with being more exposed to transaction and partner and joint venture, I'm pretty sure that the traffic of opportunity will rise in the U.S. for us, and perhaps we'll find the sweet combination that we are comfortable, and that would be a great opportunity if the case showed up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just one other question. I'm sure, obviously, you've seen the BCUC review of Site C, and I'm just wondering if there are steps that you are going to take to review the opportunities that Innergex and Altera hold within their own pipelines to see if you could, get in and discuss with the government some of the alternatives and some of the opportunities that you might be able to present in an alternative supply resource scenario.
Well, I feel for the government today in a way that it's not an easy decision, obviously. They already have spent about $1.9 billion of cost in the project. There are obviously a lot of dollars to fix whatever has been started. So the bill to stop the project is anywhere between, $3 to $3.5 billion. So it takes a lot of courage for a government to cancel a project of that size. On the other end, for the NPD, if they decide to go ahead and there is potential overrun, then they will be honing those overrun and hence having the political responsibility to finish the project. They certainly don't want to do the same thing that is happening in Newfoundland with Muskrat Falls, where overrun is out of control. That being said, maybe 4 or 5 months ago, if somebody would have asked me if Site C would have a chance to be canceled, I would have said, no way. That ship has leave the port and is sailing away. But today, it's maybe 60%, 40% chance that this can be stopped. And if they do, obviously there will be an aftershock. Will they be looking right away to sign long-term contract with IPP? I doubt it, but I'm pretty sure that they would be willing to listen, and especially the NPD, I think, will be sensitive to provide opportunity for First Nation to participate in future projects. And as you know, this is something that we're very comfortable. We have many projects that could be put into joint venture with local community or First Nation. So if ever the government of BC takes a decision to cancel Site C, definitely Innergex, coupled with the pipeline of Altera, is the company that has the many answer to future needs of BC.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Thank you. I appreciate it. That's it for me.
Pleasure.
Your next question comes from the line of Mark Jarvi of CIBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Just a quick follow-up on that question. So it's safe to assume when you guys thought about the Altera acquisition that any thoughts around terminal values and residual values always baked in that Site C would be built? Is that fair to say?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And then I know it came up on the transaction call about some of the debt that's at Altera and refinancing. When do you guys think you'll be able to tackle that and maybe lower some of the cost of debt associated with Altera?
There's the ACMP or AMP debt that is unfortunately has a big make-whole. But that may all fade away in 3 years, so that one will be a no-brainer in 3 years from now. And there's also Ross Betty loan in for Ashet Oka in Sweden that bears a, if I remember well, a 8.5% coupon that seems to be expensive for us, and that could be done pretty soon afterwards. And there's also the one that comes in effect right away, but that attached to Sweden as well. But that has a lower coupon, so will be cheaper, but not as accretive as the Ross Betty loan.
And the goal would be to try to renegotiate that in 2018?
The one with Ross?
Yeah.
Yes, I think we will certainly start negotiating with Ross as soon as the transaction is done, because 8.5 for that type of debt is in our book quite expensive. We have a better alternative for that.
Okay, so that's my questions, guys. Thanks.
Thank you,
Mrs. Vachon. There are no further questions at this time.
Thank you, everyone, for taking part in this conference call. We look forward to speaking with you at our next results conference call in February. Thanks.
Thank you very much for your support again.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, you may now disconnect your lines.